Support comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. This winter, Strategic Farm Marketing is holding risk management seminars near you. A complete list of meeting dates and locations can be found at sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded the 15th day of January.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our guest and panelists today include Dr. Michael Cordonnier of Soybean and Corn Advisor out of Hinsdale, Illinois, Pete Manhart from Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois, and Mike Zuzolo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Dr. Cordonnier, I think I'd like to start with you. Maybe you could give us some indication of what conditions are like on the ground in Brazil. Maybe the last time you were there and when that was. And then I believe you updated some of your numbers this week. Can you take us through those two, please?
Sure. Well, the condition in Brazil right now is most of the soybeans are in various stages of pod filling. Now, they planted beans starting the end of September, and then they really slowed down planting in October because of dry weather. And they are harvesting some of the early beans now that were planted in the second half of September. Early yield results, I would say, are disappointing, ranging from about, I would say, upper 20s to the upper 50s. And most people are attributing that lower yield, the disappointing yield, to the beans or that encountered the dry weather in October. Now, to give you an idea how far they're advanced, Mato Grosso is 2.5% harvested, and they expect that to be about 6% by the end of the month, slower than normal. In Paraná, they're 1% harvested, and they're supposed to be about 3% by the end of the month, also slower than normal. So we've gotten off to a slow start and a little bit disappointing yields. Now, the beans that were planted starting in November, they're doing fine up until just recently. And the concern now in Brazil is for about the last 3 weeks, there's been less than normal rainfall in central eastern Brazil and southeastern Brazil in the form of afternoon scattered thunderstorms and not enough to recharge the soil to take up for the missed moisture they've had last couple of weeks. And the temperatures have been hot as well. So I did trim my Brazil soybean estimate a little bit this week. I took off 500,000 tons. I'm 93.5 million. Just this past Monday, USDA raised their estimate, 1.5 million. So they went up a little bit. I went down a little bit. But I think their information might be a little bit old. The information that CONAB released last week is very old. They did the survey for the last report the week before Christmas. So the information they use in their report is about 4 weeks old. So right now the concern is this developing drying trend in Brazil. Now, the forecast is for improved rains next week. I guess what's happening is a high-pressure system in eastern Brazil holds the fronts down in southern Brazil, and they don't make it up in the central part of the country. Southern Brazil is getting lots of rain, especially Rio Grande do Sul, northern Argentina. So there's a narrow band of heavy rain down south, and in the middle part of the country, they're looking for a shower here and there.
Mike Zuzolo, let's start with you. Do you have a question for Dr. Cordonnier? We'll continue to ask him some questions for just a bit.
Yeah, I guess the big thing that's probably on most of the producers' mind I speak with, Doctor, is the idea that at some point South America will regain the export market share away from us with China. Wondering if that is expected to be better or worse for us this year, and if that's going to be delayed because of some of the things you were talking about.
Right. It is going to be delayed a couple of weeks. Last year, the first vessel left Brazil with soybeans on January 31st. That's not going to happen this year. Quite interestingly, a company called Williams Maritime, which tracks vessels going in and out of Brazil, as of last Thursday, there were no vessels at all in the lineup for the ports of Santos or Paranaguá for soybeans. When I read that, I could hardly believe it. I read it again to make sure I was reading it right. Normally, at least the last couple of years, by this time in January, there might be 50 vessels in the lineup So for whatever reason, everybody's satisfied, I guess, with what they're getting out of the United States. So there was none in the lineup. Now, my guess is they will start exporting soybeans about the middle of February. And if they get, say, 2.5 million tons out of Brazil by the end of February, I'd be a little bit surprised. So it's going to be a slow start, but they do have a big crop, a record crop, to come out. So it will come out eventually, but it's going to be kind of a slow start.
Do you suppose, Dr. Cordonnier, that that will manage to eat through more soybean exports out of the U.S. Than the USDA has currently pegged in its latest reports?
My guess is yes, because of the good export pace here, and you're going to have a couple more weeks extra to come from the United States. So I would answer yes to that question.
How much?
I'm not quite sure about that. I'll leave the other guys maybe come up with a better answer than that, looking at the exports numbers, but it is going to be a little bit higher. Gentlemen, what do you think?
Anybody got an idea, or Bill Mayer, you can ask Dr. Cordonnier a question, one of the two.
Well, I guess my question kind of leads to that. As far as, you know, they've got this record crop, as far as their infrastructure and their export capacity, has it improved enough to handle and be able to export a lot faster than what they've done in the past because they've got more bushels to export?
The answer is yes. They have made improvements. For example, at the port of Paranaguá, they're putting in four new ship loaders. One is already up and running, one will be running by mid-February, and two will be operational in June. And each one of those ship loaders has a 30% more capacity than the equipment they're replacing. And it's also they're more agile, they can move around faster, so they are making improvements. They're expanding ports capacity in Rio Grande, southern Brazil, also in Santos. And also, what I think is most important for the future of Brazil, they are developing barging operations and ports north on the Amazon. Now, that's only going to take a little bit more soybeans this year, but next year, it'll be double this year. It's going to double every year for like 5 years. And I would guess within 5 years or so, they will be exporting 20 million tons of soybeans north through the Amazon. Right now, I think it's about 12 million that go north. So that's going to get bigger and bigger every year. But for this coming season, there are going to be logistical problems, especially out in the countryside, because the delayed planting means there's going to be more concentrated harvest period, and there's a limited number of trucks. You just don't have enough trucks to go around, so there will be some logistical problems. But I think the ports are well-positioned, at least better this year than last year. But it's like an arms race. You know, the farmers increase their production, the ports increase their capacity, and neither one can kind of catch up with the other. So there are going to be some problems.
Pete Manhart, you have a question for the doctor?
Yeah, we heard about the poor yields early and the dryness in some areas, and we've heard that, and sometimes that makes beans go up. But we're still having a bumper crop, a record crop. Is it just barely a record, or is it a big record crop?
Last year was 86 million tons in Brazil. Right now I'm 93.5, so I'm 7 million tons more than last year. And my number might come down a little bit more, maybe 1, 2, 3 million tons, depending on how the weather goes and when the rains become more normal. But like I tell all my clients, I cannot foresee any way Brazil does not have a record crop. It's going to be a record crop unless February turns exceedingly dry and that sort of thing. So you're right. It's going to be just a trimming of the crop. Certainly not a catastrophe by any stretch of the imagination. Still a record crop.
Mike Zuzulo, on that note, I want to turn to you because USDA, if this is a record crop coming out of South America, has a really large number for the ending stocks for the U.S. soybean crop by the time we get to next fall. It remains at 410 million bushels as released in the WASDE figures that came out on January the 12th earlier this week. But they reconfigured how they managed to get there. Can you explain what happened?
Well, I think the big thing they did was they took the acres down, but they took the yield up, and I think that was what probably was one of the most negative features to the trade, because the trade was expecting a demand increase and pretty much a steady mindset in the acreage and in the yield as well, Todd. So I mean, they took the harvested acres to 83.1 versus 83.4 in December, and they took the yield up to 47.8, which is 3/10 of a bushel, essentially added to the production by about 11 million bushels by doing that. So even with an increase of 10 million bushels on the exports, we still stayed at the same ending stocks figure. And I think it's important what Dr. Cordonnier is saying is because USDA also increased Brazil's crop to 95.5, but I found it interesting their export number for Brazil for the 14-15 marketing year is 46 million tons. That's actually lower than what it was last year. So here they're looking at almost a 10 million metric ton increase in production, but USDA is saying they're not going to export any more than they did last year. So there's a lot of give in these numbers right now, and what I guess I'm getting at is with if they have 9 million tons extra in ending stocks compared to last year, like the USDA suggests, and prices go lower, why wouldn't Brazil be able to export more than last year unless China has some significant problems?
Do you have any answer to that question?
No, I mean, I think this is where the statistics don't match up, and I think this is where if you have lower prices and you have a bigger crop, then demand usually finds an increase, along the demand curve, and I just don't think USDA's numbers have caught that up yet, unless maybe they think that we have such big supplies that we will effectively compete against Brazil so that Brazil's exports are actually maxed out. But I find that very hard to believe.
Bill Mayer, the 410 million bushel carryout was not the number that really pushed the soybean market to the lower side earlier in the week after the report. It came out of the winter wheat seedings, where they dropped that number by 2 million acres, and I suppose the expectation must be that many of those will be planted to soybeans in the United States. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, Todd. And I'll just follow up on your question there on Mike as far as why the USDA has those numbers. That's why I ask about the infrastructure, if the USDA possibly felt that the infrastructure couldn't get that extra bushels out of Brazil. But, yeah, I think the acres is what everybody's looking at on the new crop beans and somewhat on the old crop. I think the wheat acres just added to the mix. And the interesting thing is I'm not sure that the trade right now is looking at how our new crop ratio, corn-soybean ratio, has really changed over the last 40 days or so. It's gone from really favoring beans to still slightly favoring beans, but not nearly as dramatic as what it was, say, in the end of November.
Do you suppose that will have an impact?
Well, I think that it still could. I think that's a question we've discussed in our office at length here the last few days, is if you see prices drop here and go through this February period with the crop insurance prices getting set, is that a sign that we could see maybe less acres than what the trade's expecting here on soybeans? There are some things with this yield exclusion on the crop insurance too on corn that I think could encourage maybe some corn acres that maybe the trade isn't anticipating right now.
Yeah, I have not read that. Gary Schnitke wrote about it on the Farm Doc Daily website. What are the things that are happening with it? I know you're up to speed on it.
Well, I mean, basically, you can increase your corn yields. You can, by excluding the 2012 crop year for the most part, the 2012. So farmer is going to be able to get a little bit better guarantee than what he would have had he not had that yield exclusion in there. So, but like I say, favoring the corn in some cases, possibly.
So that's a unique twist that we'll see develop as we go through the beginning of the growing season and by the time we get to the end of March and have the prospective plantings report. Let's turn our attention to you, Pete Manhart, and your view of the marketplace for soybeans, what farmers have been telling you about what they've got in the bin, what they plan to do with it, because there's a lot of this crop that's still left around.
Yeah, and they're afraid and don't know what to do. And if you look where we came, old crop beans, we came from 920 last October 1 and went clear to, 1079? And the Julys went to 1097. And they've all backed off a bunch, and people are saying, well, can we go much lower? Well, it looks to me like you could go as low as where we started. That's terrible to say, and there are people out there that have been talking an 8 in front of beans for the last 3 months because of the large supply here and the huge record supply coming out of South America. So I don't think it's good. Every time we're going up like we did this week, we have 1061 on March beans Monday. Did anybody sell? Did anybody protect them? Here we are at 991, 70 cents less. Same way with new crop. Where were we on Monday compared to now? When we see those bounces up, we need either to work on some cash or work on protection for the price.
And I know that South America can have an impact, but maybe I'd like to have all four of you think about what the price of beans between now and March 31, when the prospective plantings report comes out, might be. Will it stay in the $9 range? Can it dip into $8? I'm wondering a lot about that one, and it has a may have a factor on the ARC and PLC decision as well there. But who's got an idea on this? Maybe we should start with you, Dr. Cordonnier, on this, and then come back around to everybody else.
Well, I think it's going to depend on a little bit more weather in South America. If the February weather is similar to January, where we have less than normal rainfall, then we're going to trim the Brazil crop a little bit more and then probably won't go, you know, all that much lower. But if the forecast, which calls for better rain starting next week, if that turns out to be true, and then it continues that way, and then all the medium and later maturing beans do very, very well, you know, my number might go up still, still kind of yet to be determined. And if the Brazil number keeps getting bigger and bigger, then that 8 number might be more realistic.
Mike Zuzula?
I think, Todd, the biggest factor that maybe we haven't touched on that determines this is the dollar crude equity market correlation. And I think because we're running in a late 1990s model at this stage of the game with the dollar, and that was negative for the grain markets, and if the equities markets keep selling off and the crude market keeps selling off and the dollar keeps going higher, you can't really give a good price level based upon supply-demand fundamentals. So essentially what I've been talking to clients about is whether you're looking at crude oil, whether you're looking at cattle, whether you're looking at wheat, or whether you're looking at corn and soybeans, you have to get a top in the dollar and the bottom in the crude at this stage of the game. Having said that, if I looked at just the macro, or cut the macro out, looked at all just the micro supply, demand, and USDA's report, and I'm still using a 380 carryover for this past year's bean carryover figure, that would put my new crop down around those lows from last September, around 915 to 925 for undervalue for new crop November beans.
And Bill Mayer.
Yeah, I think Mike has hit the nail on the head there as far as I think our fundamentals just by themselves, and as Dr. Cornier said, if we get the rains and the crop comes in where he's got it pegged at or possibly a little bit more, if it doesn't rain, those are definitely factors. But if we have a big crop down there, continue to have a record crop, which I think is a pretty safe assumption at this point. I think the real thing that could knock us down to levels that we haven't seen yet in the last year is the macro markets, the outside markets, the crude and the dollar. And, you know, I think one of the key questions here is the cheap crude oil positive to our economy here in the United States, or is it a negative? Because if you look at the last 8 years, you've had a lot of growth in employment and a lot of growth in the economy in the energy sector. So I think that's going to be a key going forward here. But I think we definitely have risk to the downside, and I don't think the farmer can bet on, you know, not getting the rains in Brazil. That's not a very good position to take right now.
So your thought process may be that even if we're driving more miles, the lower price of crude oil at this time may have a deeper impact to the downside of the marketplace than to the upside?
Yeah, I think that's still a question mark. I'm not sure that that's been, I don't know that we know that yet.
Okay, good enough. Dr. Cordonnier, can you turn your attention to the corn market and your broad overview of how it's laying out as of the January reports?
Okay, let's look at Brazil here very briefly. Brazil has two corn crops, the first full-season crop and then what they call the safrinha crop, double-cropped after soybeans. The Brazilian farmer cut back on his full-season corn acreage, for sure. He planted more soybeans. And now the question is, what's he going to do for the safrinha corn crop? I have the Brazil corn estimate at 74 million tons. which is down about 5 million tons from last year. I think the weather in February will determine again how many acres of Safrinha corn get planted. If February is relatively dry, then the farmers are going to be hesitant to plant corn later than normal, because the soybeans are going to be harvested late, into some relatively dry soil, and then maybe the chance of early into the rainy season. Now, on the other hand, if February turns out to be wetter than normal, that'd be good for late soybean yields, bad for soybean diseases, and then bad for the harvesting of the soybeans. So a wet February is a double-edged sword. And we don't want to have anything that delays the planting anymore for the corn, because the ideal planting window for corn in central Brazil closes about the end of February. So I still think the Safrinha corn crop is going to be down maybe 5 or 10% compared to last year. But they mentioned about the currency. The currency in Brazil has weakened a lot over the last couple of months. That is a price increase for Brazilian farmers. So almost every place in Brazil right now, the price of corn is above the cost of production. So if the weather cooperates, he's going to plant his corn and maybe hope to make a little profit. So I think the Brazil corn crop is going to be a little bit below last year's level, but it's still yet to be determined.
Hey, Mike Suzzolo, when you look at the numbers from USDA, of course, they dropped the ending stocks number, meaning they lowered it by 121 million bushels. The trade, I guess, initially thought that was pretty good, but it came under pressure from the soybean numbers. And then it seemed to just feel heavy later in the week. What's your view of that one?
Well, it was, and it was heavy from a standpoint of the global numbers. I think that's where, if anything's carried over from 2014, Todd, I think it's that mindset in the trade by the bearish traders that we have ample supplies, and you can't argue that position. The thing I think the trade continues to want to play is the spreading, and I think this is where between the winter wheat acres and also the corn carryover number being reduced, like you were talking about just now, I think the trade probably has in its mindset over the long haul, as Bill was talking about, that bean-corn ratio, probably trying to keep the corn elevated in relation to new crop beans. And they could do that by taking the new crop beans lower on a percentage term. So spreading seems to be very, very key, and it will remain so. I think the same with the wheat, whereas the trade was not, I don't think, surprised by the soft red wheat acres being lower. I don't know anyone in the trade right now that was expecting the hard red wheat acres to be down 2 million. So I think you could see a significant spread trade develop between hard red and soft red wheat, especially if the colder weather comes back like the European model is starting to flash. Having said all that, my take on this market is, with the ethanol making a 9-year low to this week in futures and the stocks only at 1-year highs, it goes right back to the energies. There was nothing that the trade that could get from the USDA, the bullish trader could get from the USDA, that could offset what the dollar and the crude were doing.
Bill, were you disappointed with the grain stocks figure for the United States and what it might mean for livestock consumption of feed?
I don't think I was surprised with it. I don't know that I could say I was disappointed with it. I think it was kind of interesting, the regionality of it. I think to go to your livestock question, the stocks in the western, northwestern part of the belt where there's a lot of livestock were shorter, especially the on-farm stocks and what some people thought they'd be. So I think it what it does is it tells us that we're going to probably have some corn move out of the central part of the corn belt up into the western part of the corn belt to meet some of the needs up there, and probably down in the southwest as well. So that probably spells some good news from those farmers' standpoint, from a basis standpoint, in the, you know, in those areas where they're lower on stocks than expected.
And Pete Manhart, your broad view of the marketplace at this time for corn in particular and what farmers are thinking. I know they're beginning to be disappointed, and it may be that they're looking even further out into the 2015 crop year and realizing that the good times really have ended. But that normal might not be that great, and it's got to be disappointing for them. And I suspect you hear that on the phone when you talk with them.
Yes, especially this week after the highs we made early in the week and then dropped off late in the week. And I think a big part of it is the U.S. economy supposedly is really doing well. The dollar's way up there, and the rest of the world, the economic news isn't very good, so they have less money to buy to start with, plus at a higher rate. And as a result of that, they're a little worried about, even though we're competitive corn, they're a little worried about who's going to buy it and what the usage is going to be, let alone the production in the entire world that grew a record crop and had that carryover in the world.
We seem to be at one of those points where in the marketplace we're either changing or we're stutter-stepping, one of the two. And I don't know which it is. And I guess the stutter step could be a fall. the stutter step could be just a base builder. Does anybody have a preference on which we're at this point? Or maybe I'm just reading more into the marketplace than really is there. Dr. Cordonnier, could you kind of take that point up for me?
Well, I would say I would look at it as a base more than a stutter step, because we had some big logs, record soybean crops in the United States and South America. But all we needed to do was stub our toe in either North America or South America, and those big carryovers go away pretty quickly with this big demand from China. The corn is not quite the same as the soybeans because the United States is so big in corn production, and everybody's now, I think, a little bit confident about another big corn crop in the United States after what we had last year. So we'll see, but I would look at it more as a base instead of a step sideways, a step downward.
That seems like better news than many would be thinking. Anybody else agree with the doctor?
I think I would agree with that, and I think that we also have to look at the current price levels here relative to, you know, the lows that we got to there at the end of September, early October. We're still well off those lows, and long term, you could look that we're still in somewhat of a trading range. One question I guess I'd have for the doctor would be, long term in South America, their cost of production, if we go below the cost of their marginal cost of production, will they take acres out of production if we, you know, do that long term? I know you had kind of mentioned that on the second crop corn, you would see lower acres there.
Okay, there is going to be a problem this next year in Brazil, because the weaker currency is good now when they're selling the crop, but it's bad when they got to buy fertilizer or chemicals, and over 70% of the fertilizers in Brazil are imported, as well as most of the chemicals. So their cost of production is going to go up. Right now, the margins are tight. What has saved the Brazilians for the time being is the weaker currency, because they're seeing a better price for soybeans, for example, than American farmers because of the currency, the exchange rate. But then that's going to come around to bite them here in a few months. We have to buy inputs for the next crop. So it's going to be, margins will be very tight in Brazil. Now, they really haven't cut back on soybean acres. You have to go all the way back maybe 10 or 15 years to see that happening because of this mindset of expansion and that sort of thing in Brazil. And most of the expansion now in Brazil is plowing up degraded pastures and putting in row crops. So it's not farmers going out buying new land, clearing it, and putting in this big investment. It's just plowing up your pasture. And that's easier done than going to buy new land. So I still think an expansion will occur in Brazil soybeans this coming year. It might be a small expansion. This year, acres went up about 4.8%. I expect maybe 2 or 3%. But you got to remember, a Brazilian farmer, if he doesn't grow soybeans, he's not in business. You know, soybeans is his farming business. So it's going to be really hard for them to give that up.
Was there anything in the reports from January USDA numbers that was positive that the marketplace missed or should have considered?
I think the winter wheat acres brings back the potential for a U.S. and European weather market as we get into wintertime. Garden City, Kansas, 5 hours west of me in the middle of the hard red wheat belt, talked to some clients there and also some clients in the Texas Panhandle. They have no snow cover. They're very dry. They're going to be 60 degrees the next few days, and then the bottom's supposed to fall out on the temperatures in the European model. If that comes to fruition, you're going to trim this crop more and more and more so that wheat ends up being more of a supportive feature, again, like it was in 2010 and 2011, versus what it was in 2013 and 2014. And, you know, when I was writing these notes out today, I wrote out, is there any good news? Because you could tell after the report where everybody was going to be, you know, because of the client calls that we've all had. And it goes back to the demand is improving. The export demand is improving, even on a strengthening currency. And like we had in the mid-90s and in 2010, I think we have a good potential, especially given this super low price in the crude oil and in the copper and in the iron ore, that the commodities could find a very strong incentive to be bought again by mid-year, Todd. And so when I see the monthly chart oscillators for all the major commodity indices at their lowest levels since 1999 and 2000, I think we don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. In other words, we don't want to throw out the idea of hedging between now and June, and I think that's very important. And I think Pete has hit that very hard. Bill's hit that very hard. Dr. Cordonnier has hit that very hard, and I'm trying to as well. But I think if you step back and look at the calendar year and what Bill and Dr. Cordonnier are saying, that's a V-type market that we could be looking at later in this year. And so I think producers need to introduce that into their mindset and be prepared for that for their marketing plan.
So the news is better than the news actually appears to be. Is that what everybody kind of has been saying for the last half hour or so here? Is that right? Anybody disagree with that?
No, and I think that DEIS-1 stocks number on the beans is something that, you know, if you looked at it versus trade expectations, either the trade expectations were wrong or the other things entered the trade that maybe caused the market to go lower. But that was somewhat of a surprise, and I think it'll be interesting to see when we get to the March 1 numbers what kind of stocks we have.
All right, final word from each of you. Let's start, Mike Zuzulo, with you.
I think the key here is the live cattle market is a great example of the inefficiency of what's going on right here. The choice box beef is back to all-time highs right now. Cash cattle are trading $165 to $170. Feeders are up $1.50, $100 since the holidays here in St. Joseph, Missouri. But the futures market's a full $10 to $15 below the fat cattle price and hitting four-month lows. And I think this is what really nails down the issue of what's going on with the crude oil and the dollar. So be very ready for a turn in the commodity complex once we get through the energy and the dollar issues.
Pete Manhart from Bates Commodities, you have final thoughts.
Well, we've got all kind of guys wondering when it's time to buy, when it is going to turn around, and I think we need to get to mid-February because of South American weather. But one of Mike's points about wheat, are we near lows? Should we be worried about the wheat crop here because we don't have the acres and we don't have the weather? And when will it turn? And there are still chances. We've been very volatile this week. I mean, beans, what, a 70-cent range from high to low in 4 days. That's pretty volatile. We need to be ready to take advantage of the up moves to protect whatever we do have.
Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing.
Well, I think that as we sit here today and looking at the charts, we have kind of looked like we could see a little bit of a trend change on the soybeans. I think the Brazilian weathers we've discussed can still come into play. But if you've been slow to get bean sales made, I think you've got to change your mindset to, you know, if you put some offers in 20 cents above the market, that type of strategy, you need to be getting more aggressive on sales. I don't know that you want to come in and make sales tonight, but I think you have to look at what levels, you know, get those offers in there.
And Dr. Cordonnier.
Well, Brazil is going to have a record soybean production, that's for sure. And the weather is somewhat of a concern right now, but generally it's going to be a record large crop. Same thing is going very well in Argentina as well, so a big South American crop, and probably going to be that way before when it's all said and done.
Our thanks, of course, to Michael Cordonnier. He's with Soybean and Corn Advisor out of Hinsdale, Illinois. Our panelists also included Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Mike Zuzulo from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois. You can always find Commodity Week online at willag.org. That's willag.org. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and E-Newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.